Live from Batonia, New Zealand, this is the Cinematica Podcast, your weekly guide to what's on at the movies. You can find this and other episodes at cinematica.co.nz. Good afternoon, wherever you may be, whatever time of day it is that you've managed to discover this little hidden gem buried amongst the masses of riches that at iTunes. This is the Cinematica Podcast coming to you live from Batonia in New Zealand. And my name is Dan Slevin. I'm the producer and editor of the show. And with me in the studio is the executive producer, Simon Wherry.
Hello, everyone. How you doing?
And we also have our news editor, Kaylee Carruthers.
Yes, and Weather Girl. I think Weather Girl is an appropriate term for me here.
Indeed. And I suspect that with summer on its way, we're going to need great updates on when the best weather for going to the movies is going to be. So, each week, we're here to review all of the latest cinema releases. We're going to be talking to interesting people about what they've been watching. And we're going to keep a close eye on what's happening around the movie world. Films and stories that we're looking forward to. In today's program, Jessica Chastain plays a young Helen Mirren in The Debt. We get all thespian about it with Anonymous. And then we go back to the 80s with Conan the Barbarian and The Thing. And also, I don't know how she does it. So quite a lot to cover during the show today. All that and more in this week's Cinematica Podcast. But first, just a little bit of follow-up from last week. This last week, we actually launched the show. We unleashed Cinematica on an unsuspecting movie-going world. And I was thrilled, first of all, that lots of people downloaded the show, gave us a listen, and we got some quite good feedback. Kaylee, you've got a selection of some of the feedback that we received on your desk.
Yes, I did. Last week, Twitter was absolutely blowing up. People were giving us lots of really lovely and positive feedback, which was quite nice. So thank you to everyone out there who's been listening to us. Special shout out to my family, because I know they're big fans as well.
We have a very, very big audience in Canada. Don't we?
We do. British, very
British,
supportive.
In British Columbia.
In British Columbia, yes. West Coast is the best coast.
I'm still waiting for something from San Diego. And that's all I'll say about that.
Right. Well, okay. I'll keep an eye on the stats for you, Simon, and let you know exactly when that transpires. Our Twitter handle is CinematicaCast. That's all one word, no punctuation. CinematicaCast. So you can actually give us your feedback by using Twitter. There's also a Facebook page, which we'll tell you about a little bit later on. And, of course, cinematica.co.nz, which is our very posh website. Mm-hmm. So, some messages.
Yes. So, TinRibs27, who's also a reviewer, I believe, has been sending in his reviews. We've been retweeting them, which has been great. The New Zealand Met Opera official Twitter feed has been listening to Cinematica Cast and pumping us up a bit, so that's wonderful.
Awesome. We're very, very happy to have you on board.
Yes. Sakura underscore 59, just listen to the first three Cinematica Cast podcasts back to back. It's fantastic to have a good quality weekly film podcast in New Zealand.
I think listening to all three episodes so far in a row is above and beyond the call of duty.
Well done to that one.
Yes. Well done. Well done indeed. We've got from Gemma CF some compliments on our logo. So, and yes, of course, our web design was done by Ocular here in Wellington, and the logo was designed by Ed, who also works at Ocular.
Fabulous stuff.
Fabulous indeed.
And we're stoked also at the positive response that we're getting from the industry, because we're looking forward to adding more features to the show as time goes on. That will include interviews with filmmakers. That'll include giveaways and prizes as well. So we're really pleased that the New Zealand exhibition and distribution industry have listened to the show, like what we're doing, and don't mind that occasionally we bag some of their product. Well, I mean, maybe they do mind, but they're not. They're being mature about it.
It's a very mature industry.
Indeed. Well, it's over 100 years old. And another little bit of feedback or a response, I guess, to last week. Kaylee and I, we both went to see Metropolis at the Michael Fowler Centre here in Wellington. The New Zealand Symphony Orchestra putting on a screening of the restored version of Fritz Lang's Metropolis with the full NZSO live accompaniment. It was a fantastic evening, wasn't it? And I'm now totally hooked on the idea of going to the symphony orchestra, even when they don't show films, to keep me occupied while I'm listening. I thought the sound was absolutely fantastic. The playing was brilliant. What did you think, Kaylee?
I loved it. This was, even though I am a film nerd, a self-professed film nerd and a film student, this is actually the first time I've seen Metropolis. So I haven't seen the original the soundtrack as it was when it was released, but it was so incredible. It was so futuristic. The special effects were amazing.
Yeah,
for the time it was made, and I was blown away.
It's so influential, isn't it? There's so much film, science fiction film, that simply wouldn't exist. The whole way that we perceive the future, I guess, started with that film Metropolis. So, Simon.
It was 1927?
Something like that, yeah, 1927, yeah. And prescient, and absolutely set the standard for what came afterwards. There is one more screening of Metropolis with the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra. It's at the Auckland Town Hall on Saturday night. So, Auckland listeners, I do recommend that you rearrange your Saturday night schedule so that you can get along, because it is a fantastic evening out.
Fill the house and go and see it.
Yeah, something to for film fans, cinema files to recognise, is that it is an NZSO gig with a film rather than a film screening with a live accompaniment. So the orchestra are pretty much lit up throughout, which is great because it means you can look down and you can actually watch them working. But it's not like you're going to be sitting in a completely dark cinema watching the film. It is both simultaneously, but we really do recommend it, and we say more please NZSO. That was fantastic. What have New Zealanders been going to the movies to watch this weekend? There was a lot of films opened on the weekend. How many of them have pushed their way into the top five?
Well, we have just one new one in the top five this week, actually. So coming in at number five, we have Midnight in Paris. Number four, Paranormal Activity 3. Number three, new this week, or last week, I guess, last week, was Drive. Premiered at number three, pretty good.
I think that's an awesome result for what is quite a... it's not the easiest film to watch in the world. I mean, it's a fabulous piece of cinema, but it's not easy.
No, I mean, it involves you from start to finish. There's no getting out of it. It sucks you in, and it demands that you watch it.
Something else about Drive, which I think might be pushing that box office result, is that lots of people are seeing it twice.
Yep. I will see. I mean, I've seen it once, but I will see it again before it finishes. I thought it was amazing.
And I'm determined to see it on DCP digital as opposed to boring old 35mm, which I'm a bit over.
And I think I'll go on a date to see that one too.
It's a
great date film.
Yeah, it is.
Go and see it.
All right. Number two is the Inbetweeners movie, and number one is the Justin Timberlake film In Time.
Which you really liked, didn't you? You thought that was great.
I don't know about really liked. I thought it was...
Okay.
No, I thought that it was brave. I thought that it was interesting. I thought that it was ambitious. It just failed to live up to its own expectations. But I'm pleased that a film like that is actually getting a big audience, and you know, there's some messages in there that I hope that are getting through to people. I think that perhaps a few people. It'll be interesting to see what happens next weekend, because it'll be word of mouth that dictates what happens to it after that. The biggest disappointment for me in that list is Paranormal Activity 3 still being so high in the list, because that really is garbage.
We're all stunned. We're all stunned.
I know, but you know, you've got to call it how you see it.
As you do.
And just looking at the US box office, there was I was very, very pleased to note that the big film this weekend in the US is a film that Kaylee and I are looking forward to enormously. In fact, we're pretty much scratching at the door, hoping
cat
that this
door. the cat door.
Puss in Boots is the number one film in the US, and that opens in New Zealand on December the 8th. It's still a wee way away.
It is. But our listeners can look forward to, there will be a review from my mom. My mom and dad went to see it this weekend because they live in Canada and they loved it.
Great. So we're going to get some advance.
It's mom approved.
Fantastic.
We all know William Shakespeare, the most famous author of all time. Writer of 37 plays, 154 sonnets, several epic poems, and why we are here today. But what if I told you Shakespeare never wrote a single word?
Well, that's old lovey Sir Derek Jacobi pimping Anonymous, the new, speculative fiction film by Roland Emmerich, who loves to play fast and loose with history and the facts. This is a film about whether, as you know, whether William Shakespeare actually wrote all of those plays, and wonders who might have written them if it wasn't him, and why, because they were so influential in terms of Elizabethan politics and society. And it's been getting a hell of a kicking, this film, around the place. The reviewers have not been kind. They've not been kind to its basic premise, which is, it's an insulting premise, which is that somebody who had very little education and was basically a working class guy from the sticks, there's no way that he would have had the education and the background and the history to have been able to write all of those plays. And so it must have been somebody posh, basically, to do it. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, fundamentally that's an insulting assumption to make. But to give the film a kicking on the basis of that, I think, is a little bit harsh. I really liked it. Sorry, but
that's all right. That's okay.
I went to see it at 10:30 on Saturday morning. There were only about five of us in the theatre, but one of the other people that was with me in the theatre was Colin McColl, who's director of the Auckland Theatre Company, and so I think it shows that this is a piece of work that probably appeals to old theatre people like myself, because. And one of the reasons why it appeals to us is because it absolutely doesn't argue with the concept that theatre is important and it's influential and it changes people's lives and it changes society. And for those of us that have slaved for years putting on shows, to not even have to have that argument is a really fantastic thing. So we get on board, and I found it quite delicious, actually. It was a moustache-twirling romp. And you have to put aside the fact that it's all nonsense. I mean, of course, Shakespeare, I mean, as close as we can gather, Shakespeare wrote all of them. He was a genius. It's fantastic. You know, we could move on. But if you're gonna invent a story, invent this one, because it goes along at a cracking pace. There's lots of intrigue, and there's, you know, there are a lot of great British actors in this, and I figure that I know they like to eat, so they're going to do whatever work that comes across their path, but at the same time they're also they're not going to sell out Shakespeare, who has been there living for such a long period of time. There was Derek Jacobi in the trailer, you know, setting this whole thing up. So I think that, you know, it's a romp. I enjoyed it. And I think that it's being criticised perhaps for being something that it never really intended to be. Have you seen it? Anybody
yes.
else around the table? Kaylee, you're itching
I'll interrupt your weekly monologue. Your weekly soliloquy.
Oh, nice.
Ooh.
One.
Bust a little Hamlet.
Just trample over, just step in, because, you know.
I can't, you're too powerful.
Oh, sure.
Too powerful on the microphone. Cannot compete. Cannot. Yes, I did see Anonymous. I saw it Monday afternoon. I saw it here at the Lighthouse with three other people, so it was great. It was very nice and quiet. It was you know, early.
That
afternoon.
Was in your three-person cinema, so you were actually turning.
It was shocker. Yeah. It was turning
people away.
Yeah.
I actually did enjoy this film as well, but the interesting thing is I found that the Shakespearean kind of drama that was advertised as being the big point of this film was actually a side story. And for me, the more interesting part was this kind of like Tudor.
Like intrigue
and sex drama, which was, you know, is very popular right now.
Oh, and Elizabeth, the scandals of Queen Elizabeth I, you know,
yes.
Cate Blanchett, there was none of that stuff in her version.
No.
So, you know, I think that you know, your eyes might get opened a little bit. That's, of course, assuming that any of it's true, which, of course, we think none of it is true. Yes. But either way, yeah, I thought it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah, and I thought, and you know, good timing. Speaking of mustache twirling, because it is Movember.
Here in New Zealand, yeah,
all over the world.
Is it international?
I
thought we'd invented it.
No, you didn't. Maybe you invented it, but it has gone international.
I had Mo's before they were charitable. And we'll never do so again. And those photos will never show up on Facebook. So
those photos will be in the show notes this week.
So your two word summary.
My two word summary would have to be, even though I enjoyed it, I think my two word summary this week has to be false advertising.
Ooh, nice, oh, nice
like
work.
Yep. Yeah.
Guilty pleasure.
Guilty pleasure.
A recent study showed that women with young children don't sleep through the night. Researchers were at a loss to explain why. They could have asked me.
Taxi!
Instead of sleeping, I do the list. Number one.
Take Emily to school. I am just so jealous you get to look nice all day. We just frump around at the park.
Number two. Keep my head above water at work.
Hey, are you running a little late this morning?
Kaylee, I'm going to throw this one to you because you're the woman in the room, and this is a woman's picture.
Oh, thanks. Yes, I don't know how she does it. It's a comedy, as you could probably tell from the chipper music in the
trailer. You certainly couldn't tell from the actual laughter in the theater, but anyway.
Oh. So it's a comedy based on a critically acclaimed bestseller by Alison Pearson, which follows a Boston-based working mother, played by Sarah Jessica Parker, who's trying to desperately juggle marriage, children, and a high-stress job. To be honest, I'm actually not sure how they did it and how this film was made. It was just, I don't know what was going on. It kind of tried to be a Sex in the City with the voiceover of Sarah Jessica Parker and the talking heads, but at times the talking heads were really confusing and you didn't know if they were talking to a character or talking to the audience, and it was just so flat.
It's dire, isn't it?
It's dire.
It's not only dire, it's... we've seen this film. If this film had been made 20 years ago, it might not have been quite so insulting, because this whole idea that it's difficult to combine a career and a family, and for women in particular, because there are lots of double standards and around the commercial world, etc. And you know, I just think that don't we all know that now? Like, does this still really need to be? To have a film made about it. The other thing that really offended me really deeply about this film is that for all of her troubles and her trials and tribulations trying to juggle the career, she's an investment banker in Boston. She has an executive assistant full-time working just for her. She also has a full-time nanny looking after the kids. She also has a husband who, okay, admittedly it's Greg Kinnear, so he's basically an idiot, but... Sorry, I've got no time for Greg Kinnear whatsoever. There's a blind spot with him. So moving, setting that aside for one moment. He's an architect, isn't he? And is developing. He's got his own business and he's super busy as well. It's like, hold on, there's no drama here because these are all about your choices. The drama would be if they have to do both, if both of them have to work because that's simply the only way they can put food on the table. And then there's a real sense of some issues around it. But actually, she just spends the entire film whining And not only that, she also, and we've talked about this in previous episodes, she also spends the entire film lying to people. And, you know, like, there's not a question that comes up that she does, her first impulse isn't to lie to people. And I just think that that's just, it's rotten. It's a stinker. She's a stinker of a character. It's a stinker of a film.
But isn't that the same thing with Sex and the City, in that, you know, the biggest dilemma is what shoes to wear and who to go out with, and kind of it's so sort of like, you know, it's childish. And, yeah, and this is what this sounds to me like, is the same sort
exactly
of thing.
And we should set fire to both of them.
Oh. See, my coworker decided that you could retitle this film to Biannual Sex in the City.
Nice work. Do we have two words for I don't know how she does it?
Failed attempt.
Grossly insulting. Time for some news.
Yes, hello, and welcome back to the news desk here with Kaylee Carruthers. So, starting off our news headlines this week, we have some sad news, and I will go to Simon.
Yeah, recently Mark Sarfati passed away, and Mark was the CEO for the Independent Exhibitors Association of Australia and New Zealand, and it was a very sad moment for the industry, and he was someone who was extremely charismatic and hardworking for independent exhibitors like myself. So his passing is very sad, and he will be missed.
It's an extremely difficult task, isn't it, wrangling all of the independent exhibitors who, as we know, basically are innately suspicious of each other and of... They always sort of get the impression that somebody else is getting a better deal somewhere along the line. So to get them speaking as one voice takes a remarkable talent.
It's an
it?
Amazing achievement, and he really has driven the industry forward. And like you say, it's very hard to get independent exhibitors like to be, they'd like to do things themselves and find their own way. And so to get them to sort of act as a collective and start, you know, talking together and negotiating, he's done it all, and he's, you know, he had the industry mana to do that. And so it's a real loss.
And because it's so sudden, there's obviously nobody waiting in the wings to step in.
Not at this point of time, but there will be somebody at some stage.
We'll keep an eye on that story. Kaylee.
All right. So moving on to some movie news. Tintin has opened and is blowing up the European box office. And there's some early reviews that are coming in that are quite good as well.
Yeah, it's been... the Europeans, generally speaking, are loving Tintin. And I know that it's had its first screenings in the US as well. And people are really getting in behind it. We've got to wait quite a long time here in New Zealand before we get to see it. Something that I did want to mention regarding Tintin is that the Guardian newspaper seems to be running a kind of anti-Tintin campaign the moment, in that they're sent, all of the reviewers that they've sent or journalists that they've sent to report on it are massive Tintin nerds who are absolutely bound to hate whatever version they see. It will never live up to their expectations. I've read two or three articles in The Guardian from people who are basically saying Tintin's this work of genius, this massive work of art, and this film completely sells it out. I just want to give these people a shake to say, you know, they're not taking the books away from you. They've just made a film. You don't have to watch it. And it's not as if you're not going to be able to go to your perfectly preserved childhood bedroom and go and sit cross-legged on the bed and while away the time with the books. It's just nuts that people should get so wound up about this. But anyway, that's my little Tintin rant, and we will be talking about it closer to Christmas,
yes,
the actual film itself.
Indeed. Glenn Close won the Best Actress at the Tokyo International Film Festival for her role in Albert Nobbs, and that's opening in New Zealand on Boxing Day.
Another Boxing Day.
And I've had a peek at that.
And
it's really... She's amazing. She does an incredible job.
She's playing a man, isn't she? Or is she playing a woman who is playing a man?
So, right, yep.
Yeah, masquerading. Yeah. And this is a film that, an award like this, I think it's just starting to give us some hints about what might be happening come Oscar time.
Definitely. And, I mean, she'll be right in the mix with that performance.
So Albert Nobbs being released in New Zealand on Boxing Day.
Indeed. The new Bond flick, Skyfall, has finally started shooting with Mendes at the helm directing. Daniel Craig and Judy Dench.
Judy Dench.
Judy Dench. All right. Sh- are returning. Also, Albert Finney, Rafe Fiennes, and Javier Bardem.
He's going to be such a good bad guy.
He is. Look, I have to say, I'm really looking forward to this. I know that a lot of people thought Quantum of Solace was a disappointment after Casino Royale, but I do believe, and this is, I'm speculating here, but I do believe that once we see the third one, we'll start to Quantum of Solace. This it will make more sense because they are a trilogy. It is the same, effectively the same bad guy that is being that is under attack from Bond all the way through, and we're just slowly we're learning more and more about the Quantum organization, which is the name of the bad guys. And I just get the feeling that once we've seen number three, we'll be able to go back to Quantum of Solace, and we'll get a better sense of how it fits into the whole picture, and it won't be quite so. People maybe won't be so down on it.
Mm. I loved Casino Royale.
Yes.
Especially that time at the end when he goes in to save that Canadian undercover agency and she leaves and says thank you quietly as she leaves.
In Canadian.
In Canadian.
In Canadian.
She didn't say A at the end though, did she? No.
I thought that was really funny. Canadian joke. Ridley Scott says he's going to do another Blade Runner.
And, yep, and he hasn't decided whether it's a sequel or not or whether it's just another film in the same world.
There better be unicorns.
An interesting sort of side issue. I heard an interview with Nicholas Winding Refn, the director of Drive, and he was talking about how that film came to be made. He was in Hollywood working on a film for Harrison Ford, and this was a film in which Harrison Ford was going to die, and Nicholas Winding Refn, making obscure European violent art movies, was the perfect guy to be the first person to sort of basically kill Harrison Ford on screen. And they worked and worked and worked at this, and then Harrison Ford decided that he didn't want to die. And that was the end of that project. And so, literally, Refn was wandering around LA feeling incredibly depressed that he'd wasted all of this time. He took a phone call from Ryan Gosling saying, "I want to have a meeting with you." And they got on like a house on fire, and hence we have Drive. So,
and their new collaboration coming out later.
Yeah, I think that they're a team. Apparently, Refn describes them as being sort of psychically bonded. They don't actually need to speak to each other, which is, you know, why Ryan Gosling doesn't do very much talking.
Doesn't need to. He just oozes charm and sex and cool. He can just stand there and you just have a conversation staring at him.
So anyways, another thing we can thank Harrison Ford for is Drive.
Yes. Yes, and the European Film Awards nominations are out. Lots of attention is going for Melancholia, The Kid with the Bike, Le Havre, and We Need to Talk About Kevin.
And I think that... another thumbs up for the New Zealand International Film Festivals for bringing Melancholia, The Kid with the Bike, and Le Havre to the festival earlier on this year. In fact, actually, I think some of those films are even still making their way around the country. So, I know that we've got to talk about Kevin is coming up. Have we got a release date for that, Simon?
We have, but for the life of me, can't tell you what it is.
It's not this year, though, is it?
No,
it's going to be in 2012.
It's end of January, early Feb is where it'll be placed. And Melancholia is looking like it's going to be like a 26th December release for that.
Right. So, yeah, I think, again, those European Film Awards give us a bit of a clue about some potential Golden Globe and Best Foreign Language film nominations. So worth keeping an eye on.
All right, and our last bit of news today, Bertolucci's The Last Emperor is getting the 3D treatment, and David Cronenberg turned down the chance to add another dimension to Naked Lunch.
I don't even want to think about that.
I wonder how long
Naked Lunch in the 3D?
I wonder how long he thought about it. interesting, though, that after the success of The Lion King, and I saw the trailer for the 3D version of The Phantom Menace, on Sunday afternoon, so they're starting to wind up the publicity for that, because I think it's going to be an annual release of all of the Star Wars films in what's the word for when they're in the order of the time of the story, not the order that they were released. So The Phantom Menace is going to be the first one released. That's in February, remastered in 3D. Apparently Jar Jar Binks is still in it, but Hollywood's worked out that there's an awful lot of money to be made actually putting old stuff back into cinemas, and the way to persuade people to go again is to turn things into 3D. I wouldn't have thought that The Last Emperor was be much of a candidate, but Bertolucci thinks it's a fantastic idea, and if he thinks it's okay, then I'm sort of, I'll take his word for it. And was that the end of the news?
That's the end of the news.
That was a lot of news. Well done.
Thanks.
Next, we're going to get some thoughts from Simon about the debt. Hold on. I've just got to push the right button at the right time.
Welcome to the mission.
Their assignment had been to capture the surgeon of Birkenau, a man whose sadistic experiments left thousands disfigured or dead.
It's a brave thing you're doing.
I'm not brave. I'm terrified.
Only four people know what happened here.
No matter what, the truth stays in this room, between us.
What if we could go back? Would it be different?
We can't go back.
The debt. Simon, do you owe it a debt?
Oh, I do, in the sense that it was it's a very good film. I spent a couple of hours checking it out last week, and came out of it feeling very, like it was a very well acted and pretty impressive film. I mean, directed by John Madden, who, is Shakespeare in Love fame. A stunning cast with Helen Mirren, Tom Wilkinson, Kieran Hines, and then Sam Worthington, Jessica Chastain, and Martin, and New Zealand's own Martin Koskis.
Or Chalkash,
It goes from this sort of mission into East Berlin by this team of Mossad agents to capture this awful, awful sort of person, character Dieter Vogel, who was the surgeon of Birkenau, and it does kind of cover a little bit of his exploits in the film, and they're not too pleasant. But then it also flashes forward, into the sort of late 90s, where you've got the characters played by Helen Mirren and Tom Wilkinson, and they're sort of they've got a burden that they have to deal with, and without a sort of spoiler alert, and going into too much detail about that, but it is fascinating what they've done in the past and how they sort of
Something happened on that mission, and they've come back heroes, but they've got a burden that they carry, and I guess there's a reckoning, isn't there, in terms of that their secrets being revealed. It does flash backwards and forwards an awful lot, doesn't it?
It does. But I didn't mind that. I didn't find that a problem. I thought it was well done.
There's a final sequence where Helen Mirren sort of becomes the spy again, and it comes out of retirement, and I really enjoyed that sequence at the end, and I actually would have liked more of that. I mean, she's so fantastically watchable on screen, and she wore the burden and the weight of the stress really, really well. And so I could have done with more of the older ones, yep, and a little bit, yep, less of the younger ones. Well, not that they weren't.
I thought the females in the cast were the stars. I mean, Jessica Chastain was really good in her character.
She's in a very central role.
But of course, you're right. I think Helen Mirren, the more the screen time she had, the better the film was. But I certainly think that it's a very commendable film, and it is a kind of interesting political thriller.
And there are a couple of performances that I want to sort of highlight out of it. One is the guy who played Dieter Vogel. His Jesper Christensen is the guy's name.
I'm glad you got that one.
And interesting, we were just talking about Bond before. He is has featured quite a lot in the last two Bond films. I think that a lot of the tension in the film that we're talking about, The Debt, wouldn't be there without his wonderful performance.
Yeah, and also there's a period in the film where you're not sure. Like, they've got to snatch this guy and get him out of East Berlin for this to face trial. And when they actually snatch him, you really, before that, he's just this person who's a doctor who's looking after this woman. And then later on, you actually see him for what he is when he's actually captured. And he's a kind of an awful character that's done awful things.
That's right. And I think that showing both sides of his nature. Sam Worthington is, I think, the movie star that they've tried to hook this film around in terms of getting younger audiences involved. He was in Avatar, and I remember reviewing him in Terminator Salvation way back when, and I described him as an Aussie buffhead in that review. And actually, to be honest, nothing has really changed. I felt like he was the weak link in the film, and you know, I just don't think he's got the chops for it, to be honest.
He did serve as the eye candy. Out of the three of them, the younger group, he was kind of the eye candy of the three of them, the good-looking one.
I didn't think he was, you know, I thought he was good in his role. I thought they all were. It's just that you had this another level of actors, and so they were kind of, you know, right, struggling to keep up in a way. So I thought that, you know, they didn't actually do a bad job, but they just had this class act around them.
That's a very, very good point. Two words.
A great thriller drama. It's more than that.
Thriller drama. We'll just narrow that down to
drama.
You want to do that?
Okay. Drama.
Drama.
My two word review is not bad. I enjoyed it. I was entertained.
Not bad. Wow. My two words for it, I think, relate to John Madden, the director, because I think that this was his Bond audition. So I think that they know that there'll be another film after Skyfall, which Sam Mendes has already got his name on, and I think that John Madden will be there or thereabouts when it comes to.
Do you think Layer Cake was for Daniel Craig the launching pad for Bond? Like Layer Cake?
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And I think also that this Bond Skyfall will probably be Craig's last. I think that he will be too old. Because it's taking them years. It takes them like 3 or 4 years to make, and I don't think he'll be ready for the next one. And besides, there will be either a Fassbender. I think that after the trilogy they'll be looking to reboot once again, so I expect they'll go to a new director and a new Bond. You heard it here first. Remember, and then in about 7 years' time, when they make the Bond after next, you can come and tell us how wrong we were.
My God,
somebody was attacked,
but it seems everyone is fine.
Either someone miraculously healed themselves, or someone is not who they say they are.
What was it doing to him?
It's imitating his cells. I think this thing copies its prey and then hides inside it.
Kaylee, The Thing.
Yes! Yay! Oh, funniest movie I saw this week.
That's a problem.
No, it's not a problem, but we'll get into that later. First, okay, The Thing. So it's a prequel to the 1982 original, starring Kurt Russell and Wilford Brimley, one of my favorite diabetics. If you've ever seen his ads, it's probably lost New Zealand audiences. Our audience is in America and Canada.
He's the talking moustache from Cocoon.
Yes, I'm Wilford Brimley and I have diabetes. This ad series he has. someone to look up to.
How go from The Thing to that?
Because he's in The Thing.
I know, but...
Because it's funny.
I'm gonna put my hand up, and I've had to do this in every single episode so far. I'm gonna say that I haven't seen the original.
Yeah, me too. Oh no, I have seen the original. Not this one though. No, I love the original.
Really?
Yeah, it's great.
So when it comes to me, I will actually be able to take it on its own terms. But Kaylee, carry on.
All right. So it's a prequel to the 1982 original, which was a John Carpenter film. And so in this one, at an Antarctica research site, the discovery of an alien craft leads to the release of a shape-shifting alien that assumes the appearance of the people that it kills, which it pretty much explains to you in the trailer. I wasn't really a fan of horror films before because I get really scared. Like, I can't do Paranormal Activity. It's too frightening for me. But
you wussed out on Paranormal Activity. I gave you several opportunities to go and see that.
And I told you several times I didn't want to see it, Dan Slavin. You don't have to bully me.
It's the gig, though, isn't it? It's through the snow. We've got to get there. We've got to deliver the mail.
I had to...
Have you ever walked through snow, Simon?
I have, once or twice.
I had to watch I Don't Know How She Does It.
See?
So did I. Simon, did you watch it?
I watched one film this week, and I thought I did pretty darn well.
You did. You got the best of the
lot. The money, though. You don't... Yeah, you're the money. We're the watchers.
Okay, so were you horrified by The Thing?
I wasn't. Oh, I thought it was hilarious. Dan, you were sitting beside me, and I could not stop laughing. I thought it was so funny, and it was just so over the top. It was a real great horror B film through and through. Like, it was just true B cinema, and I don't
even
think
even down to the cast.
Even down to the cast.
A B list of another Australian,
Joel Edgerton.
Joel Edgerton.
I was expecting more from him, but. Mm.
Yeah, I think that he probably expected a bit more as well.
It does. A lot of it does come down to direction. You know, an actor can only be as good as his director.
And script. He didn't really have very much to do. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who I think's got quite a future ahead of her, but she's going to... she was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yes, she was the love interest.
Yeah. So I get the feeling that she's got some real potential, but I think not if she keeps down this particular path.
Mm.
So there is... One thing that I thought I quite liked about it was that there were a lot of the effects were not digital. They were makeup effects, and that they were had sort of built stuff, like they built creatures and slobbered Vaseline all over them, so they looked slimy. And so I kind of like that old school effect side of things. But then when they went digital and the creature came alive, and some of it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Some of those, and I get the feeling that there was nobody on the film that could tell the difference between the really eggy effects and the ones that were actually kind of creepy, that they just sort of threw a whole lot at the wall and sort just decided what would stick. Yeah. You've got to, do we need to talk about it anymore? I mean, I don't even know if there's many more to it.
I actually watched the original today. I watched it this morning. And so it's fresh in my mind. And actually, the original was, I wouldn't say scarier, because it's equally as cheesy and the acting's kind of like ho-hum. But the effects, because there were some computer effects. But because it was 1982, they were like amazing built effects. Like, this is amazing early Cronenberg-looking stuff. It was great, and it was scary. And I felt that in this version, it wasn't scary with the digital effects.
And I'm guessing also that there were a lot of things that they couldn't build, so they couldn't show, so that there were secrets kept, you know. There was a lot more mystery, in the same way that I've been reading interviews with Spielberg about Jaws, and how, you know, you don't see the shark for well over an hour in Jaws, and the main reason is because, you know, they built it and it didn't work properly. So they had no choice but to basically keep the thing a secret, and actually ended up building the tension. Whereas in modern films, they don't make you wait. They basically put it all on the table for you before you've had a chance to even work up any suspense.
Mm. I just want to give a shout out to that secondary character, the really beardy guy, like the ginger beardy guy, and his one facial expression the whole time was fabulous. I loved it.
He was one of the... Are they Norwegians? It's a Norwegian base, isn't it?
So yeah, he looked like a rugby player, and he just had this one look on his face. It was great.
So your two-word summary for The Thing.
My two-word summary for The Thing this week is horror turd.
Horror what?
Horror.
Horror turd? Okay, yep. All right,
That's harsh.
We got it. That's very harsh.
Mine, because it's basically a B-movie, my two-word summary is B-.
Ooh.
Okay.
Behold! In despair! Your new master.
Kala raises the souls of the unspeakably evil.
You are sought to enslave all of Hyboria.
No man shall live in chains.
Can I just say, just based on that, I want to go and see it now. It just sounds like a Metallica concert.
I'm not gonna warn you off,
because
far be it from me to suggest that anybody's taste is questionable or you own it. You own your taste, and if that's what floats your boat, Simon, then get in there.
I just want to look. Can I just ask? Because I haven't seen it.
You were supposed to see it this week.
I know. And I probably won't until, you know, I don't know when. But just want to know, because I remember I liked the original one. And I remember that, you know, with fond memories, because, I don't know, probably the age I was when I watched it. But Do they recreate the scene with the snake, the woman that turns into a snake, and he kind of cuts her and throws her in the fire, and she screams off into the distance?
No, but there is a snake. Oh. Nobody turns into the snake. The snake already exists. The serpent.
Simon, you described that scene to me, and I knew immediately that I was vetoing this film this week.
Conan the Barbarian in 3D. I have to say that amongst the fraternity sorority group of New Zealand film critics, when it was announced that this film wasn't going to be released in New Zealand, there was a collective sigh of relief that we weren't going to have to sit through it. And it was only a week ago that I found out that Event Cinemas were going to basically play it exclusively across the country. So not only did I have to see it, but I had to pay to see it because I don't get comps at Event Cinemas. And Sunday afternoon, I had to drive from Wellington to Lower Hutt twice in order to see all the films I had to see. It was a nightmare. So I was not in the best of moods anyway before sitting through Conan. Boy, oh boy, this is garbage. It really is.
And you just watched The Thing.
I know. And I'll tell you what, The Thing was funny. The Thing, as you say, had some moments where you felt kind of warm towards it. It was like a little trier, even though it wasn't quite succeeding. Whereas Conan, it's just rubbish. And we've got, you know, when your lead actor is struggling to even get close to the kind of majestic screen charisma of 1982 Schwarzenegger, then you know you've got some real problems. It's I hope that everybody involved lost a lot of money, actually, because I think they need to be punished.
A side effect of the 3D kind of culture.
Yeah, definitely. And in fact, it's I had a conversation because I needed to confirm some of my suspicions about it, because I wasn't sure whether it was originated in 3D or a conversion. So I checked with our 3D expert, Miriam Ross, who we've had on the program, and she was able to tell me that it was, in fact, a post-production 3D. And you can see that it actually, and this was what concerned me, is that there are a lot of artifacts and moments where the 3D just doesn't work properly. There are flat planes, like it's five or six 2D layers laid against each other rather than genuine depth. I think there was a sense that, from a marketing point of view, that Conan was a property that would go down really well internationally, into the non-English speaking territories, the kind of countries that have made Nicolas Cage a star. And I think that that's possibly fair enough because, you know, Conan himself doesn't really speak English. So, but, you know, it's, the effects are rubbish. The 3D is rubbish. Conan is rubbish. And the sexy bits aren't sexy. They're rubbish too. And I can't really tell you how disappointed I wasn't disappointed at all because I had no expectations. So it was, but it, yeah. There's definitely the low point of the weekend for me.
Two words.
Sub Schwarzenegger.
Ooh.
You know, and that really is saying something. But you know, but you're a Conan fan from
memories, but you got to remember I was a kind of teenager, like a young
time. I do get the impression that it's not the kind of thing to get teenage hormones racing. And it won't encourage you to remember those far off days, Simon.
Oh, okay.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
That was our last review for this edition of the Cinematica podcast, Conan the Barbarian in 3D. We have discussed The Thing, The Debt. What else did we talk about? Anonymous. I don't know how she does it. We've covered a lot of ground today. So thank you very much, everybody, for listening. And next week, we're going to be talking about Contagion, the new film by Steven Soderbergh.
That looks really interesting.
It does look pretty. It does look interesting, doesn't it? There's also a film called Beginners that's been. There's a trailer been playing for that since the dawn of time, I think. Finally, we get to see it in New Zealand cinemas. 13 Assassins is our new martial arts film, but it looks like it's only getting late shows in town, so might be a struggle for us to get to, but we'll do our best. And there's another Asian drama, Snowflower and the Secret Fan, opening this weekend, so we'll be talking about that too. Just before we go into the sort of closing off the show, in my research I was looking for some stuff about The Thing, and I found this. This is the original music by Ennio Morricone for the original version of The Thing, the 1982 John Carpenter version. And I listened to this and I thought, man, we still hear this every week in trailers. This is basically trailer music. Have a listen to this. That's also the opening theme to The Thing. So if you're not asleep after 30 seconds...
Can anyone else hear Ryan Gosling's voice? You've got 5 minutes.
Yeah. And not just that, but that sound has been trailers for the last 30 years. Yeah. It seems
and
to me.
You get the similar soundtrack with Romero's zombie series. There's a similar soundtrack running through that as well.
Anyway, interesting stuff, and I kind of wish that there'd been somebody with the quality of Ennio Morricone involved in this year's thing. But there you go. This feels like a podcast that we could have recorded back in 1985.
If only. I wouldn't have been alive, though, so it would have been tricky.
We would have got you involved somehow. Don't you worry about that. If you've enjoyed this episode, and I hope that you have, please leave us some feedback at the iTunes store. Ratings and reviews are, of course, super useful because we want more people to discover the show. So the better the ratings, the better the feedback we get, the higher up the charts we get. You can also contact us with your feedback at Twitter. CinematicaCast, all one word, is our Twitter handle. And our new website, very posh-looking thing it is too, it's cinematica.co.nz. Do we have a Facebook page yet, Kaylee?
Yes, we do. You can search us on Facebook, or you can link to us through our website. We don't have a Facebook/name yet. We still have to decide on that legal entity.
Oh, so we've got to have a meeting.
We're going to have a power meeting after this.
We'll get some tea and cake.
What happened to the tea and cake?
None. I gave you those Jaffas.
All right. Yeah.
We don't have a guest this week, but we might have a guest this week.
Well,
next week.
Yeah. We should bring scones or something every week, but you can't eat them.
No, you can't eat while you're actually talking. No, no.
But our listeners can eat while they listen.
The show is executive produced by Simon Wherry, edited and produced by me, Dan Slevin. The news editor and weather girl is Kaylee Carruthers. The theme music is 6x6 by Earl Van Dyke, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. Just search for Earl Van Dyke. We're going to leave you with this piece of music from Ennio Morricone's opening theme to The Thing. What were we talking about a little bit earlier on, about how somebody's boyfriend uses podcasts to go to sleep? Well, this will be the very one. So it's good night from me, Dan Slevin.
And from me, Kaylee Carruthers.
And from me, Simon. Good night.